Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And it is Friday, thank God. And we are celebrating Good Friday today. But more importantly, on G's Power Hour, well, not more importantly, but as important, it's Friday in the Garden, and we have Mr. Robert Bowden here with us to help give us some gardening tips, especially now because we need to be planting more as the food prices are going up. Robert, good morning. How are you? Oh, no. Oh, boy, boy, boy. Let's find out what happened to Robert. We're going to, though, talk a little bit, hopefully, about... Oh, Robert.
I'm here.
Hey there. Hey there. Okay. Hey, thank you. How you doing?
I'm here. Nice to hear
from
you.
Yeah, I can hear you now. Good to hear from you, too. How are things going?
The weather could not be better. You know, it's that time of year when... It's cool at night and warm during the day, and it's time to spend time out in the garden, I think.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So I have a couple of questions. We kind of pass over talking about them, but I did want to get into more of talking about flower boxes on the windows. And I wanted to ask you, because for some people it's more about a style choice in terms of the type of houses that they have. But for those that do select planting flower boxes, can you tell me what type of flowers do you put into a planter box, a window box?
Well, the first thing you have to consider is whether or not the plants that you plan on putting in a window box are in full sun or shade or a little of both. If you have window boxes on the north side of your house faces north, then clearly you're going to have to put some plants in there that are that grow best in shady conditions. On the other hand, if your house faces east, south, or west, those plants are going to require sun during the day. So there's two different groups of plants that you have to consider. And there really isn't any determination one way or the other how big they are or how long they are, or how deep they are. You can buy many of them online and attach them to your structure in some way. But the first thing you have to worry about or think about anyway is whether I get full sun or shade during the day, and that will determine what kind of plants you put in there.
Okay, and is it something that you would consider perennials for or mostly annuals for that? And I know you say sometimes it really doesn't matter in Florida, but basically, you know, what kind of choices are you making?
Yeah, you're looking primarily for bedding plants, you know, plants that are going to give you a lot of color, plants that do well in Florida during the heat. You know, it isn't just how much sunlight they get, but it also about how much heat they get. There's so many different plants that we can grow in the wintertime, and then there are certain plants that will only grow in the summer, and that's something you need to consider depending on what time of the year your planting. So if you're growing in the summer, of course, you can grow, you know, all sorts of petunias and celosias, and there's a lot of plants that will grow in the summertime in full sun. And there's a lot of them that will grow in shade as well. And if all you need to do is go to a garden center or to a home improvement store, and it sounds easy. You go to the store and you see which plants they have out in full sun, and that's what you want to grow in your window box in the full sun. And then if the garden center or the home improvement store has their plants in the shade, then you take those plants and put them in your shady window box. Probably the simplest way, because if I were to give you a list, it'd be a pretty good long list of plants that will take either or. But just see where they're growing in the store, and that's where you can plant them at home.
Yeah, so that sounds simple enough, so that's good.
Yeah.
But I guess also, too, you have to look at plants that don't require, like, a lot of depth for roots, correct?
Yeah, most of the bedding plants that we're talking about, like petunias and coleus and things like that, they have very shallow root systems, generally no more than 4 inches deep, so that's not an issue. So I'm glad you brought the roots up, though, because if you can imagine, let's say hypothetically you have a window box in your south, and your house faces south, and that sun is beating down on that window box, that window box is going to get pretty darn warm, and you have to anticipate that. So what we do and what we recommend gardeners do in Florida is they get a piece of styrofoam, and you can get that at a home improvement store. You can get them in small batches, I think. And you you have your window box, and on the inside of the front and on the sides, you put styrofoam, maybe half an inch thick, doesn't have to be real thick, and then put the dirt, your potting soil, behind that, and then plant your plants. What that does, it prevents the roots of your plants from coming in contact with the really, really hot box itself, which could harm your plants ultimately, and they're just not going to perform well. So we create almost like a thermos, if you will. We just put a sheet of styrofoam inside that box, and then you fill it up with soil. So the temperature is going to be modified a little bit because the roots won't get, they won't touch that box. And then you're just going to have to water. On the south side, that guy's going to need some water a lot during the day, and probably every day or every other day at least.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. So is this something that you can use one of those, you know, I've seen like one of those globes with the spike that you kind of turn upside down and put in your garden, I guess, for water release? Is that something that you can use? Does that help at all?
It may look interesting, and it may be pretty to look at, but those are generally pretty ineffective. The best thing you can do is just water them with a watering can.
Okay.
So, you know, buy a watering can that has 1 or 2 gallon reservoir, and just fill that baby up with water, and then you want to fertilize it with a water soluble fertilizer once a week. So it'd be like a Miracle-Gro 20-20-20. It's a blue powder, and you put 1 tablespoon in a gallon of water, and you fertilize them once a week.
Okay. So is this also something that you could possibly put on, let's say, one of those sprinklers that kind of stands up on a post with a timer? Because if you're let's say not home,
exactly.
if you're not home, you can't water. Yeah.
If you have an irrigation system, you can hook one of these little tubes up to it, and every time your water comes on to water your shrubs or your grass in your yard, it will water your window box as well. That's what they do at the theme parks. They have all these hanging baskets and all these pots. They water them. They water them on an irrigation system. So you have, and you can do it, or you can get your landscape guy to do it, and he'll put up, he'll install one of these little devices that hook up to your irrigation, and it's a little black tube, about a quarter of an inch in diameter, and you run it up and put one or two, depending on the size of your window box. You can put these little drip systems in there. You don't want a drip. You want it to spray or have a little spider-like water to it. And put them in your water box, and every time your lawn gets watered, your window box will get watered too.
Wow. Okay. All right. That's good to know.
Yep.
So the advice that you're giving – I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Yep. The people at the theme park don't water all that stuff by hand.
No, I didn't figure they did.
Of Disney, right? Disney has their flower and garden show right now through June, I think. And there are hundreds and hundreds of hanging baskets and pots. None of that is watered by hand. Some of them may be in certain locations, but they would have to hire hundreds of people to water all those plants. A lot of it is done when the irrigation comes on to water the rest of their plants.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I'm assuming that the same method that you use for your window boxes would probably apply in a lot of ways to any of your container gardens on your patio, correct?
That's correct, yeah. The only thing about planters or containers on your pool deck, for instance, one of the reasons we garden with containers and put bedding plants of different kinds in containers is because, one, they look very pretty, and two, they're mobile. So if I have all these beautiful plants in containers at my front door, but I'm having some friends over for a pool party, I can simply take those plants from the front door and take them back by the pool, and so everyone can enjoy all these pretty flowers. So being mobile is really important when you consider your containers. And the fact that they're mobile, you'll take them from your front door to your back door or whatever. You'll have to remember that they don't have automatic irrigation now. You're going to have to water them until you put them back in their original spot. But that's why we grow containers. I get bored really easy looking at the same plants in the same configuration all the time. So if I can, once a month I can jostle up that order and put some plants in the back and put some plants in the front and just change them all the time, I love to do that. It's just much prettier that way and utilizes the plants in the best way possible. So you're going to have to change those little spaghetti tubes up a little bit, but that's why we grow containers, because we can move them around. They're very mobile.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and because I'm kind of the same way. It's like, okay, that's pretty, but it's time for something different, a little different. So
Yeah.
So another question I have, and I may have mentioned this before, but I wanted to kind of just get back to it a little bit. A lot of times some of us don't have yards that are even. In my case, I have one that kind of slopes to an angle. So for example, when I'm trying to, when we're trying to, let's say, mow, when the grass has gotten up a little bit or whatever, sometimes it's quite difficult, depending on how steep the slope is. Are there things that you can, let's say, plant in areas that are difficult to access that will look nice and require maybe not so much maintenance?
Yes, slopes are an issue only because you have to be careful what you plant on them and how you care for them. So if you use any chemicals, you're not having those chemicals go into a lake or a stream. So
right.
you want to be cognizant of the environment and make sure you don't do anything that's going to harm the environment by using excess fertilizer, for instance. When you have hillsides or from high to low, there's many different ways you can solve that. One would simply be plant turf on there. Turf has a very fibrous root system, and especially the sod that you get now from the sod farm. You just throw it on the ground, and whatever erosion you have has to fight the St. Augustine grass and its foliage and its fibrous roots. So grass is probably the easiest way to do it and sprint and spend the least amount of money. Otherwise, you could terrace the water. So terrace it depending on your how steep that slope is, but you could terrace it with 4x4s and slow the water down. Those are probably the two best ways to do it.
Okay. Now, before you put that turf down, do you put any type of fill dirt? Do you try to maybe level it out a little bit? What do you do?
We have an issue at the gardens with water running through our nursery and then down along the greenhouse and then down into the lake, and it's just like a river. And somehow we have to slow that water down. So we have placed some pebbles, some rock, every 40 feet or so. So the water, it starts to run and hits the rock, and it slows it down. It has a pool in the back, and then it will overflow, and then go into the next lower section. And it just keeps doing that time after time. So what we're doing is just slowing that water down a little bit. And you can do that with rock. You can do that with plants. If you have the ability to terrace it and then put sod on top of it, that would be even better. That's the best of both worlds. It's a lot of work, but I've seen very nice terraces, and they do a nice job.
And so if you put the sod down when the grass starts to grow, do you use, instead of mowing it, do you use something like a weed trimmer or something like that? Or do you just let it grow wild?
Well, it depends on where you put it and what you put down there. I mean, if you use sod, then, of course, you're going to use a lawnmower, and you're going to do it along the terrace itself. But any plant that has a fibrous root system that's going to slow that water down will help.
Mm-hmm.
It could be ground covers. It could be something like Asiatic jasmine. If planted thick enough, would allow the water to slow down just a little bit. Liriope, any ground cover would slow the water down enough where it's not going to be a problem going into a stream or into the lake.
Okay, all right. We're going to take a quick break. We are here with Mr. Robert Bowden. He is Executive Director of Harry P. Lew Gardens here in Central Florida. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. Does it appear the long arm of the law is working against you instead of for you? Whom do you call when the boys in blue are pursuing you? When the wrong person behind bars may end up being you? With over 40 years combined legal expertise, Anderson & Welch bring to bear a smart, sound, sensible defense of those caught in what may be the unrelenting grip of the legal system. Turn to Anderson & Welch first to get ahead of trouble, not fall into it, by calling 561-832-3386. That's 561-832-3386. That's Anderson & Welch Law Firm online at andersonandwelch.com. Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. It is the third Friday of the month. It's Good Friday today, and it's also Friday in the Garden with Robert Bowden of Lou Gardens here in Central Florida. And I was just talking to Robert about container gardens the window boxes for the flowers, and we were also talking about planting or putting shrubbery or sod in areas that slope or have uneven turf, especially if you're trying to stop the erosion and drainage too. And I was thinking about what you said though too, Robert, about maybe putting like maybe some decorative rocks or something. That's something I had not thought about. But maybe just some rocks would help a little bit, in as well as some of the other types of shrubbery that you want to place some of the nice ground cover that will keep some of the erosion down. So
yeah, it just really depends on how steep your slope is and how wide of a space it is you have. I mean, clearly, you know, putting sod down is going to stop the problem or at least slow it down. Whether you can afford that's a whole different issue, you know.
Right.
Depends on a lot of what you want to do is going to depend a great deal on how deep your pocketbook is.
Yep, definitely. So, okay, let's get to the real nitty gritty, so to speak. Food prices are going up, and so it's time to talk about supplementing that that vegetable budget, so to speak. I mean, it's kind of hard because, you know, you have a hard enough time trying to get people to eat vegetables on a regular basis anyway if they didn't grow up learning how to do it. I mean, I have to thank God for my mom. She was, you know, adamant about, you know, having a balanced meal. And, you know, I eat vegetables. I even, you know, as a teenager, like, you know, a lot of people come home and eat a lot of junk food. I actually made salads at noon when I was sitting down to do my homework or whatever. So, you know, there's very few vegetables that I don't like. And, you know, and I'm always willing to try something at least once, you know, if it's new. But, you know, we talk to people about shopping around the perimeter of the store to make sure they're eating healthier. That's becoming more and more difficult these days. So how can we supplement that? What can we do to make that, to lighten that burden?
Well, you know, we want to be healthy. We want to eat properly. At the same time, we're not sure where the produce that the stores that we go to, we're not sure where that produce comes from or what's been sprayed on it. There's no way of telling. You know, there are a lot of chemicals that have been eliminated from use from farmers in the United States, but many of the same chemicals aren't prohibited in many of the countries that we deal with. And so we can get strawberries year-round, we can get blueberries year-round, asparagus and all these things, we eat them out of season. But quite honestly, we don't know how safe they are. We don't know what's been sprayed on them. We don't know how much fertilizer, what kind of fertilizer, what insecticides or miticides. So we're just taking at face value that the government is watching out for us, making sure that we're eating safe food. And we have no way of knowing that. That's why I'm such a stickler on growing your own food, if possible. You know, right now, for instance, in the vegetable garden at Lou Gardens, we're growing peaches and plums and nectarines, and we have raspberries and blackberries coming. And in vegetables, we have beans, and we have broccoli and cauliflower. I just picked a whole bushel basket of broccoli this morning and shared it with our volunteers. And then there's celery. There's just an infinite amount of types of vegetables that you can grow yourself. The only way you can make sure that what is safe for you and your family to eat is if you grow it yourself. You can go to a garden center, you can go to a home improvement store, and you can buy seedlings of plants. Nowhere that I've seen, nowhere on any of the labels or any of the information supplied by the store does it tell you how those plants have been cared for before they get to their store. You don't know what they've been sprayed with and how often and with what. So you have to grow it yourself. You don't have a choice. If it's that important to you, you have to grow it yourself. But the really amazing part is it's really, really easy to grow your own food. It may seem a little complicated at first, but in reality, you can grow lettuce and beans and carrots by simply eliminating some grass in your yard where you've got 8 hours of full sun, and you dig it up a little bit, and you sow the plants in the ground, and 65 days later, you're eating green beans. It's that simple. Now, the more obtuse you get, the more different varieties of things that you get may be a little more difficult than a bean or a carrot, but it's all easy, and it can be done if you grow it from seed. And I really encourage people to do that. It's very easy.
Something I just thought about, too, because I know people are like, well, you know, this is going to be too much work to grow a little bit of this and a little bit of that and you know, having this huge garden. But one thing I thought about, too, is maybe doing like a neighborhood gardening club or something like that where each person grows a certain item. Somebody grows beans. Someone else grows okra. Someone else grows tomatoes. Someone else grows lettuce, you know, or whatever. And
yeah.
You do an exchange or something, you know, like about once a month or, you know, whenever, you know, time, whatever time you set up, whatever time permits and whenever stuff is ready to be harvested. And you exchange, you know, I have some lettuce, you have some beans, you know, let's make a trade because I'm only going to eat X amount of beans, but I will eat X amount of lettuce. You know, something like that. I don't know if that would work, but I wanted to kind of throw that out there so that someone doesn't think that they have to grow every species of fruit or vegetable that's available, you know, but maybe do it with someone that you can make a trade with. And then, I mean, and for people that are, you know, have a surplus of stuff, there are recipes for, you know, how to cook some of that stuff, how to preserve some of that stuff, put it, you know, freeze it or freeze dry it. One of the things, I just recently bought one of those air fry ovens, and one of the things that they have on there is a setting to dehydrate stuff. And I'm like, okay, that's a good way to learn how to maybe dehydrate certain, I don't know if you can do it with herbs or you know, maybe do some dried fruit or whatever the case may be. I'm going to experiment and see what I can do with it. But that keeps you from, I mean, first of all, dried fruit, you know, pretty good snack, you know. Also, you can put them in salads, stuff like that. So it's you know, there are possibilities out there, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we already do that in some areas where you have community gardens. And
mm-hmm.
For instance, there's a wonderful garden on Robinson, at the intersection of Robinson and Paramore here in Orlando. And there are 30-some-odd beds in that garden. And somebody mm-hmm. always grows too much of something, and so they're always looking for someone to give it to. You know, when I grow a row of beans, I grow mm-hmm. two rows of beans because I know there's someone at work here, or there's an older person down the street, or maybe they run into some bad luck and they lost their job or something. You know, the fact that I can give them some beans or give them a basket full of squash or something like that.
Right.
But we see it happening a lot in community gardens where somebody grows a lot of beans and you just, I can't eat all these beans. Would you like to take some home with you? Or, I've got my garden right now at home is filled with artichokes. A person can only eat so many artichokes, you know, so I give them to to a lady that lives down the street, and she loves getting green beans and squash, and we grow a lot of sugar snap peas. So those of us that have done or had gardens in community gardens, we do a lot of sharing already. It's not only a great way to share food, but it's also a great way to share information about how to grow your plants and share ideas with your neighbors and get to know your neighbors a little better. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we share a lot of food and information already.
Good. That is so good. So we are going to take another break. We are here with Robert Bowden, Executive Director of Lou Gardens here in Central Florida. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment, and we will be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time, and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Hope you're having a good Friday and are enjoying our Friday in the Garden with Robert Bowden. And Robert, I wanted to ask you also about, you mentioned artichoke. Okay. Because I'm a big fan of spinach artichoke dip. I've had artichoke cooked. I've used, like, they have the marinated artichoke. I use that in salad sometime. I don't know how to deal with a real live fresh artichoke. So how do you deal with that?
Well, artichokes in Florida are annual plants. In
okay.
Southern California, which grows 95% of all the all the artichokes that we eat in America, they're grown in Southern California. They're not a well-known plant in Florida, but I can
mm-hmm.
tell you from personal experience and having grown them for more than 10 years, there is not an easier plant to grow.
Wow.
And it's just like rhubarb. I know we've tried rhubarb in Orlando for many, many years, but without any luck. And just like it is with most of the other vegetables and the herbs that we grow, the same techniques that we use elsewhere and then bring to Florida still work, but it's about timing. It's when do you plant artichoke and rhubarb seeds? When do you plant sugar snap peas? How you plant them is exactly the same elsewhere, but it's all about timing.
Uh-huh.
So for many, many years, I tried to grow rhubarb. I'm from Ohio originally. We love to eat rhubarb. But because it's so hot, it wouldn't grow. So one night I just sat up in bed and the light bulb came on and I said to myself, grow it from seed. Grow it from seed in a time where you could grow it in the winter where it doesn't get super cold. And that's what rhubarb and artichokes like, instead of trying to grow them in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So about 10 years ago, we bought rhubarb seeds and artichoke seeds and planted them in little cups of potting soil on August 1st and waited to see what would happen. Well, they germinated very well, and they grew very quickly. And they filled up, the roots filled up that pot very fast. Usually by the end of the month, we had to put them into a one-gallon size container. And about the end of, I want to say maybe in mid-October, we took the plants from the one-gallon can or the nursery pot and put them in the ground. And, you know, the nighttime is getting cool by then, or cooler, and we planted the artichoke directly into the ground. Full sun, minimum of 8 hours of full sun, and lots of water, and fertilizer every 3 weeks. And we've got, we have monster artichokes right now. They are huge. And we would pick them and eat them, but, you know, we want people to know what an artichoke plant actually looks like. So we let them grow, and we actually let them bloom.
Uh-huh.
Or the artichoke is actually a form of a thistle.
Uh-huh.
You know, the leaves are spiny, and the fruit has little points on it. And what we eat is actually a flower bud. And we harvest them before they start to open up when they're nice and firm. And, you know, a single plant will put on one big artichoke and probably 8 to 10 smaller artichokes the size of a tennis ball. And once they grow all these flowers and everything, you're looking at April to early May. They're all finished flowering, and then they die. And that's true with rhubarb, too. It just gets so, so hot that they start to melt away with the heat and humidity. So once they've flowered, you can pull them out and
mm-hmm.
use that space for something else that you want to grow in the summertime, like turnips or sweet potatoes or okra.
Mm-hmm.
And then starting in August, you start it all over again. It's super, super easy. You can get artichoke and rhubarb seeds. You just go online and type in artichoke seeds, and we've grown over 9 different varieties, and there really isn't one any better than the other. They all work really well.
So, like I said, I am not all that familiar. I've eaten them, but I haven't really dealt with them raw. So they look, I guess, like little petals stemming out. So is it something that do you use the whole petal? Do you cut open the petal? What do you do?
It depends. I know some people will take a, you know, a raw artichoke,
mm-hmm.
and they will strip off the lower petals of that flower bud, and then after you've taken off many of those petals, they're green petals, green, you know, they cover up that flower bud, the bottom
mm-hmm.
of them starts to get a little fleshy, and then you dip
okay.
them into lemon juice or something, and then you just eat that part. But I like to use what they call the artichoke heart. So
mm-hmm.
you cut the artichoke in half longwise, and you'll see there's little furry things in there. We call that the choke. And that actually, you know, gets caught in your throat and is very uncomfortable. So you throw the petals out and you throw the choke out, and at the base of where those chokes were, there's a little part that is soft, I guess you would say, and it's that part that you would eat. You would take that out, and you can boil it. You can use it in artichoke dip. There's all sorts of different recipes that you can use artichokes with. And like I said,
okay.
they require no special care other than plenty of water, well-drained soil, 8 hours of full sun every day, and they grow like crazy.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
So what else should we be – okay, so we're trying to grow local, and if we're not growing, we are trying to eat local. We're in seasonal. We're trying to eat seasonally.
Right.
So
right.
What's in season that we should be making a part of our diets right now?
Well, you're eating cucumbers, lots and lots
okay.
of cucumbers.
Okay.
Green beans are in season now. Broccoli, cabbage, collard greens, turnips, mustard, all of these are in season right now.
Mm-hmm. Now I like...
And all of those are very easy to grow. So
mm-hmm.
you should be starting seeds, either planting them in the ground or... you know, putting them in little peat cups or little cups with potting soil in it. So it's going to be real warm here real fast. In about 2 weeks, we're
mm-hmm.
in summertime. And that summertime
yeah.
will end at the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
People say, oh, it's going to cool off in October. No, you're not in New Hampshire anymore. You're in Florida, and it doesn't
yeah.
start cooling down until early November. So
well,
right now,
some places it's like the third weekend in October. Like
yeah,
about that time at around the earliest maybe.
But right
but,
now
uh,
we should be planting things like beans and cantaloupe. And collards and cucumbers, eggplant, okra. We should be growing potatoes. I mean, the potatoes should be in the ground growing right
mm-hmm.
now. You
okay.
can grow squash now. And you should be either buying or creating little cuttings of sweet potatoes. And you should be growing... or starting to grow cherry tomatoes, not the big ones, but the little tiny
mm-hmm.
ones.
Right.
And turnips. Those are the things you're going to grow all summer long, and you should be starting those now.
Yeah. And the one thing I wanted to mention, too, because you talked about the cherry tomatoes, you know, I know everybody's used to using the regular beefsteak tomatoes or some others or aromas or whatever, but the cherry tomatoes are actually good to have in terms of traveling. And the reason I say that, because every now and then my husband will pack a salad, I'll make a salad, he'll pack it. If you try to pack it with regular tomatoes to go on the salad, your salad's going to get soggy, or you have the inconvenience of trying to pack the tomatoes separately. But if you go ahead and throw cherry tomatoes in there, then that's easier to take for lunch, or, you know, if you're picnicking outdoors or whatever. Those are
right.
definitely easier to deal with.
I thought I was the only one that didn't like soggy sandwiches. Because,
no, I don't
when
think
I,
anyone
when
likes
I,
a soggy sandwich.
When I go to the store and get a sandwich from a grocery store, I'll always have them put the tomatoes on the side, because I may only eat half of that sandwich, and tomorrow I'll eat the other half. And if you
right.
eat those tomatoes on there, everything gets all nasty. So I
right.
always have them put the tomatoes on the side. I thought I was the only one that did that.
I hadn't thought about that with the store sandwiches and stuff like that, because usually we kind of wolf those down kind of quickly. But one of the things that I do have them do is because my husband kind of likes his stuff a little bit spicier or hotter than I do. So we usually have them put the peppers on the side. So like the banana peppers and the jalapeno peppers, we usually have them throw those on the side.
Well, we might have to start doing that with the tomatoes. Yeah, everybody should be gearing up for summer planting, harvesting what they've got. I wouldn't put any fertilizer on anything anymore. It's pretty much over. Harvest what you've got. Take what you've got. Chop it up into 1-inch pieces or less. Throw it in the compost pile. And begin planning for summer, because it's just around the corner.
Now, so is this the time, or is it too early, where you put the plastic over your garden area and kind of let it, was it germinate or something?
Solarization. No, it's not too early. It's nice and sunny. So what we do, we use a process called solarization, and that means we simply cook the soil, make it nice and hot, and it kills weed seeds, it kills a lot of pathogens, viruses and bacteria, and it forces the nematodes to go deep into the soil so they don't bother your plants right away. So you can do that on raised beds, or you can do it in the ground. But the whole idea is to, let's say you're doing it in the ground. So you've got a spot that you want to grow vegetables, but the nematodes, those little critters that eat up your roots of your tomatoes and your pepper plants. Well, you can go ahead and fertilize your soil and rototill it up, make sure it's nice and moist, and then cover it with a piece of clear plastic. And make sure that the edges of that plastic don't let any air out. So you're going to dig a little ditch all around the garden, and then you're going to lay plastic out, clear plastic, and then fill that trench in so that that piece of plastic is completely sealed. It's a lot like what you're doing is creating an oven. You know, if you leave the oven door open, it's not getting as hot as you want it to be. So you need to make sure that door is closed by making sure that no air escapes from that plastic. And what happens, the sun rays go through the plastic and bounce off the dirt and bounce back to the plastic and back and forth, and that creates heat. And it's not uncommon for the soil underneath that plastic to get upwards of 130, 140 degrees. And that kills a lot of stuff. The earthworms will go someplace else, but things like weed seeds and pathogens are eliminated. And the longer you keep that plastic on, the better the result will be. You can do the very same thing with raised bed gardens, and you do that by putting a piece of plastic over the top. We recommend that you mound the soil just a little bit, because if you keep it flat or a little depression, rainwater will settle in there, and then you don't get the rays of the sun bouncing back and forth, so it's not, it doesn't work very well. So make a little mound, and then you stretch the plastic from side to side, end to end, and you staple it shut. Make sure it's like an oven door. It's nice and tight. And the longer you leave it on, the more effective it's going to be from weed seeds and pathogens. So, you know, at least a month. If you can go 2 months or 3 months, so much the better.
Okay, so at least a month, 2 to 3 months
yep.
is possible. Okay.
Longer the better. The hotter it will get.
Uh-huh.
And the deeper it will go.
So tell us what's going on at the gardens, what's coming up, and also any suggestions for, like, nice plants to get for Mother's Day, because that'll happen between now and the time we talk again.
Oh, yeah. Well, Mother's Day is right around the corner. And Mother's Day is a very, very busy day for us because, quite frankly, it's just one of those really nice things. You can take mom out, even your mother-in-law out, you know, take her to the gardens, walk through the gardens, and then we don't have a restaurant on property, but you could go to a nice restaurant close by. It's a really nice way just to get to know each other a little bit more and spend a little time with mom. And everybody likes walking through a garden, especially on Mother's Day. Shows, you know, we really appreciate you and we love you and want to thank you for all the things that you've done for us. So let's just go to the gardens and walk around. We'll have a nice lunch somewhere. And it's a great way to do it.
And before I forget, because I skipped right over it, Easter, okay, Easter lilies, you know, there's, like we talked about in the past, not all lilies are Easter lilies. Not all of what they call lilies are lilies, right?
Right. And you can take the Easter lilies once they bloom, you can put them out into the garden here in Orlando. So that's an option. So you're not only buying flowers that look really nice for Easter, but you can also plant them out in the yard. It's important, though, that during the winter time that you make sure that your irrigation is on the dry side, because if you keep those lilies nice and wet year-round, they're not going to bloom for you again. A lot of them are from South Africa, and they really like to be dormant in the wintertime. So go ahead, buy them, enjoy them in the house. When the flowers fall off, cut the flower stem off, leave the leaves, leave the flower stem on there and put them out in the garden, and they'll do real well for you. It's a great thing about living in Florida. You get to use this stuff two or three different ways.
So tell me, because I interrupted you, I'm sorry, but what other activities are going on in the garden? I know you're back doing your, and unfortunately, I haven't been in a while, I have to go. I know you're back doing your movie nights, right?
Yeah, we have the movie nights. We just had one the first Monday of every month, and that will go through November. Also, the first Monday of every month is free, and that will also go through November. We have, in the summertime, we'll have fairy doors again. We think the fairies will come back one more time, and they'll build and display their little houses. And last year we had 17 doors. I'm not sure how many we're going to get this year, but those will be out so people can take their map with the location of the fairy doors and enjoy the garden. I would recommend that you visit in the morning. We open at 9 and we close at 4. Last garden entrance is at 4 o'clock, but it's a very nice place early in the morning when it's a little bit on the cool side, and
you can
see, you know, a lot of squirrels and birds, and we have a family of owls here. We have 4 little baby owls that can be seen around the gardens, and that's always a lot of fun. And, of course, there's tons of flowers everywhere. The butterfly garden looks incredible right now. So I would encourage everyone to see that. It's quite a show. And of course,
well, Robert,
we also have the Lou House Museum, and it's open 10 till 4 every day. It's 10 to 1, I'm sorry. 10 o'clock in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Closed on Mondays, but if you want to see Mr. Lou's house, it's open, and there are tour guides that will take you through and give you a little history of all the people that have lived in that house over the years. The Rose Garden right now is really outstanding. I would encourage, if you're looking for roses to grow in your home, then there's a good display of roses, and they're all labeled, so you can see which kind of roses would perform best in your garden. So, and that's true, of course, of everything we have in the garden. Everything is labeled, and if you have questions, you don't know how to do something in your garden, be sure to stop and ask one of the gardeners. They're very able and willing to help you with any garden questions you may have.
Robert, have a wonderful Easter weekend to you, your family, and to everybody at Lou Gardens. And thanks for your time today.
All right, right back at you.
Thanks so much. Talk to you soon. Thank you all for listening. Have a blessed Easter weekend. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.